Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, I know we are in, summer has started. We hit the first big summer day on Wednesday, and we're already in summer movie blockbuster mode. We've been in summer movie blockbuster mode since April, really. So, of course, I find something small and delicate and subtle to share with you this week. Finally opening in theaters. Some reviews came out last week, but I think it's now. So go to your local art house and look for the Korean-American drama Past Lives, written and directed by Celine Song. It is a love triangle. We have Nora and Hae-sung, who have a very strong bond as children in Korea. And this is a love triangle of what could have been to a certain degree. We start with a young Nora and a young Hae-sung. Kudos to Moon Sung-ha, hope I'm saying it right, as young Nora, and Lim Seung-min as young Hae-sung. But it's that friendship, you start a friendship with somebody when you're kids, and it's going really well, and then one of them moves. In this case, Nora's family moves to Canada. We pick up 12 years later, they reconnect via Zoom. And just when that's about ready to go somewhere, life gets in the way. And the majority of the film is 12 years or so after that. Nora is in New York. She is married to Arthur, played by John Magaro. And Hae-sung has decided to make a visit to New York. And to see two of the men in Nora's life, her current husband, and somebody who meant a lot to her when she was younger. And it's not so much a fact of who she's going to go with, but it's the connections with the two men. You know, if this was a Hollywood studio picture, it would be stacked against one or the other. And that's not the case here, which I'm happy to say. You get very broad characterizations, especially in studio films, of, who they're supposed to wind up with. And this one, because what entices her about Hae-sung was, of course, her Korean roots. She has become very American as a film student. Was a film student and now in the workforce. You know, has a comfortable life with her husband, Arthur. There's a wonderful moment, the first time we see Arthur when Hae-sung comes to visit New York. And he's a little schlubby. He's a little video game playing guy. But, you know, that's her husband. So, anyway, I think we've all, as I said before, we've all had those connections with kids that would have been great, and then life gets in the way, and they move away, and you kind of look back and go, "What? How could that have been?" And one of the better reconnects via the internet, I think, in films recently. So we get time with them. I think Greta likes looking at her Korean roots with Hae-sung. He is very the traditional male. Korean male, you know, he doesn't make enough money, he feels, to support a woman like Nora, but he's trying. It's a really nice, complex triangle of people, as opposed to the love triangle and who will she wind up with. It is to a certain degree, but it's more about watching these three work together and interact with each other. So, subtlety in the summer blockbuster season. That's Past Lives. It's open. It's out there. Go look for it. Trying to catch up on some video titles that have been sent to me. Don't worry, a little bit we will go around the horn and find out what you have been watching as well. So I'm going to go start with my pile. From Kino Lorber, in 1933, the comedy drama Counselor at Law, starring John Barrymore, directed by William Wyler, early in his career. So this is 1933. This is 2 years after The Front Page, and I believe 7 years before His Girl Friday. But we already, it's trying to compete. This film is trying to compete, I think, with The Front Page when it comes to snappy dialogue. Barrymore plays a very successful lawyer. A lot of his clients are immigrants, so he becomes a voice for that, for the, for those clients. And, you know, as I'm looking at my notes, very Italian client, very Irish co-workers, you know, very fast-talking female telephone operators, loads of immigrant clients. And once Barrymore comes into the show, into the film, about 8 minutes in, it does not let up. And as we find out, one of his clients committed perjury, and Barrymore's character could be disbarred. So it's trying to take care of that, trying to take care of his clients. The film gets super serious very near the end with a sharp turn, which is a little unexpected for a 1930s film. But if anything else, you watch this to see John Barrymore at work. You can't take your eyes off of him. And the Art Deco Empire State Building office that he has. So, but yeah, this is, like I said, this is 7 years before His Girl Friday, which I believe takes the record for comedic speed. But yeah, it's worth checking out. Counselor of Law on Kino Lorber Records, Kino Lorber Films. From Film Movement Classics, a comedy from Japan in 2001. Called Warm Water Under a Red Bridge. Now, this is not a Farrelly Brothers film. So what I'm going to explain to you, now I imagine what it would have been like if the Farrelly Brothers had made a film like this. So we have a businessman who has his business has collapsed. Corporate life is not happening well, is not going well for him. He sends his family, his wife and his kids out to live with her family while he is looking for work outside of Tokyo. And he meets a woman who, man meets woman, and man has relations with a woman. And when, I'm going to word this carefully, when she is going through the high point of a physical contact, it sprays water like a fire hose. And as we find out, this woman has the ability to, whose fire hose results helps clean the water and clean the fish in the lake, that in the village that they live in. So, yeah, this is fun to describe when you can actually watch it. Her condition helps feed the river and feed the fish. So a relationship between this schlub of a guy trying to start over and the woman with an ailment that helps. He gets a job as a fisherman to help out and actually try to reestablish himself, maybe reestablish his work ethic. But she will just flash a mirror and say she needs some attention. And, of course, that attention helps feed the fish and strengthen the river. So it's a fairy tale. It's just an odd fairy tale involving liquid shooting. And it's all rooted in realism. So that's why it's a little off-putting to watch. But this was made after Japan's economic collapse. So I think they're trying to make a point as far as starting over and reestablishing your values. But yeah, if you want to see some intimate scenes with what looks like a garden hose involved, yeah, you can check out Warm Water Under a Red Bridge from Film Movement Classics. From Wellgo USA, Fist of the Condor. Which tells the story of 16th century Incas and their fighting styles. This stars Marco Zarar, for you fans of John Wick 4, Alita Battle Angel, Machete Kills. It has a vibe of a Western. We get some voiceover about a book that has all of the fighting styles, this kind of sacred manual that has been passed down by generations. And what this guy has to do to protect the book. So we have it's chopped up into chapters, one about a reflection, another one about a fight in the woods. We get back to our lead character, our Marco character, back when he had hair and he was early in his training. We find out that the real evil in your life is not your opponent, but your ego. There is a final battle where his weakness becomes a part of the fight. Like I said, think of it as this is like an Italian Western with a gunfighter, only instead of guns, it's your fist. A lot of handheld and drone shots in this one, but it's about 80 minutes and it's a pizza and beer film. So if you're into mysticism with a lot of butt kicking, you can check out Fist of the Condor from Wellgo USA. From Kino Lorber, the 1988 feature film debut of Canadian avant-garde filmmaker Guy Madden, called Tales from the Gimli Hospital, or Tales from the Gimli Hospital. It's shot like a silent film, black and white, place cards, a lot of influence of German surrealism and silent music, silent movie lighting and silent movie music. We have two guys who are stuck in a hospital during a war, and how one of the patients starts to descend into madness. This film has everything, imagery from flappers on the beach to young men wrestling to an old woman telling the two children about their mother sleeping. And it's kind of told in flashback style. I would say pizza and a beer and maybe some other stimuli to go with this one. But if you're into the kind of arty silent movie making that Madden is known for, this is kind of where it starts from Guy Madden. It's a trip to watch. It's one that you don't worry so much about the story. You stay for the visuals and you stay for the music and you stay for just how odd it is. But yeah, Kino Lorber, Guy Madden's Tales from the Gimli Hospital is out there. Another one from Kino Lorber is a documentary called Dear Mr. Brody. And this is one I'm stunned I did not know about this. This is about an event from 1970. Michael Brody is a hippie millionaire, as he's described. He is the heir to a margarine fortune. It happens. And his goal is to give away all of his fortunes. He wants to help out everybody in the world who has problems. He's going to hopefully solve that with money. He goes on the Ed Sullivan Show. He gets a recording contract with his own money. He goes to the press and says he gives out his address and his phone number and his business's address and phone numbers. Says he claims that he's worth $500 million, wants to give it all away. And as we learned, easier said than done. So we get the story of Michael Brody incorporated with footage from today where the filmmaker found 12 boxes of unopened letters from January of 1970. And the goal is to open the letters and find out what people wanted. And this is a fascinating look at, on one end, of where we are as far as when we need help or when greed comes in. We do get a reunion with some of the letter writers, which is pretty powerful. Either they don't remember what they wrote or they remember exactly what they wrote. And we have those letters where just enough to help out. They're behind on their bills. They're behind on their mortgage. They want to take art classes. They have a film project. One family has hospital bills. You know, there is also on the flip side, there's a great moment with a woman who was an inspiring actress, and you see her on camera change the amount she wanted, going from $1,000 to $5,000. Then we have that aspect. So I think if you're a half empty or half full, you know, if you're an optimist or a pessimist, you will get something out of this, and it'll help strengthen your own argument. And Brody thinks it'll take him 3 months to give away all of his fortunes. And as we find out, it's easier said than done. And after a while, first there's cracks in Brody's armor. First he says that, you know, you'd talk to him, he'll help you out. He would walk the streets with $20 bills and just handing them out to people. He would throw cash outside of his office. You know, he looks like this initially as this happy-go-lucky margarine heir and who wants to give away all of his money. And then he eventually says it'll take him 3 months. It'll take him 3 months to get rid of everything. Then he says you'll get a faster response if you send it to the office, which means it's starting to bother him at home. It's starting to affect his marriage to his wife. He has a son. And eventually he starts to break down as far as he's tired. It's bedlam over brotherhood. If people keep bothering him, he threatens to cut the whole thing off. It doesn't bode well for Michael Brody. He killed himself in 1973 at the age of 24. And we do get interviews with his son and his ex-wife. One of the more fascinating aspects was he offered $10 million. Was it million or billion? I'll have to look. But $10 million to Nixon, to President Nixon, and to North Korea to end the war. And there was apparently a news item where he took a helicopter and was going to go to the White House. And then the Air Corps said, you know, if you keep hovering over the White House, you're going to be shot down. So they land. He tries to get an appointment. He can't get an appointment with Nixon. So, you know, a sad rise and fall for somebody whose intentions were good. And, you know, the amount of LSD he also took didn't help. We also find out that his check started bouncing later on in this project. It was $10 billion. Sorry, $10 billion. My notes are correct. But check started bouncing. He started changing how much money he actually owned. And it does not end well. And we find out that the son currently has 50 boxes of letters from people asking for money from Michael Brody. So a fascinating look at greed and the good in somebody's heart and how it can go bad. So look for Dear Mr. Brody on Kino Lorber Records. I'm sorry. I've been thinking about the film, The Blue Show this week. Kino Lorber Films, home video. Finally, from Film Movement, a French drama called A Radiant Girl. We are following a 19-year-old aspiring actress named Irene. It's the summer of 42 in Paris, not that summer of 42. And she's making friends. She's loving theater. If you're an actor of any kind or an artist of any kind, there's a lot of fun scenes of working on scenes with fellow students in the building, outside in public. Her acting out both parts if she's doing it by herself. Directing parents in her scene at home. Starting to fall for a young man in her class. And as we find out early on, I've mentioned Paris, 1942. We also find out the family's Jewish. And it is a slow build. And about 75 minutes into the film, the yellow stars start to appear. And I've seen a lot of films involving World War II and the Holocaust. And sometimes the representation of that horrid event is used in a very abrupt manner. That's not the case with A Radiant Girl. You're not hit over the head as far as when history is changing in this film. It's very casual in its presentation of a yellow star that has to go on her coat and a look that she gets from a cafe server. And the final moment in the film is absolutely horrifying and doesn't show a thing. As the film ends, the real horror is about to begin. But I was really impressed with the slice of life and the subtle build into what's going to be really horrifying actions in France. So look for A Radiant Girl on Film Movement Home Video. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. We will go around the horn in a second, and then we will grab a pencil and find out what you've been watching. I'm a little late on this, so I apologize for Dead People We Like. We never have time for Dead People We Don't Like. But I do want to raise a glass to author Cormac McCarthy. Has 8 credits based on his work. The television series Visions. In 2000, they made a film version of his work, All the Pretty Horses, which needs to be revisited. course, he's best known probably cinematically for No Country for Old Men, the great adaptation of his novel there, as well as The Road from 2009, short film Outer Dark, TV movie Sunset Limited. His novel was made. His novel Child of God was made into a film in 2013, and his last credit from 2013, screenplay, if I remember right, The Counselor, also known as Cameron Diaz in That Car. So salute to Cormac McCarthy. Thank you for God, especially No Country for Old Men and The Road. Strong stuff there. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Before we grab a pencil, before we go around the horn, there's one more Kino Lorber release I want to tell you about. This is, boy, this is, it's a Nuremberg double feature for those who didn't get enough of Kino Lorber's release of the great film Judgment at Nuremberg. But there are two documentaries on one disc. One is called Filmmakers for the Prosecution, and this is about the making of the not only the Nuremberg trial, but also the making of the film Nuremberg, Its Lesson for Today, which was written and directed by Stuart Schulberg. Stuart Schulberg and his brother were veterans. Their dad was also a Hollywood bigwig. And under the guidance of director John Ford, they helped gather evidence and footage for the Nuremberg trial. In this film, in Filmmakers for the Prosecution, you see one of Schulberg's daughters seeing footage for the very first time. Bud never talked about the project itself, except there is one interview, one public interview, where he's at a podium talking about the footage and what they gathered. So it was these two brothers chasing Bud and Stuart, chasing footage before it's destroyed. We get to see a lot of the actual trial footage. There's the devastating moment of Rudolf Hess, one of the 21 defendants who claimed he had amnesia before going on the witness stand, and then on the witness stand recanting his amnesia lie. So, and it turned out to be a 3-hour and 15-minute film that they brought to and had it showed at court. It also covers the aftermath of the trial and the film's path and the daughter restoring the film for the first time. And then, of course, as I mentioned, Nuremberg, Its Lesson for Today. I highly recommend this, especially as far as the gathering of evidence is a fascinating aspect to the Nuremberg trials. So you can watch these two. One is about 60 minutes. The other is about an hour, almost less than an hour, 20. And then you can watch Kino Lorber's video release of Judgment at Nuremberg. Just don't go to bed right away. Watch Bob's Burgers, watch Archer, something to cleanse your palate afterwards. But Filmmakers for the Prosecution and Nuremberg, its lesson for Today, both on one disc, thanks to Kino Lorber. All right, before we go around the horn, the Golden Globus guys, they are back at it with Kickboxer 3, so The Art of War, so it's good to hear that from the guys. And this week on You Must Remember This, the film's Disclosure and The Last Seduction for the Erotic 90s series. Apparently next week, Karina Longworth is going to do Showgirls and then take a brief hiatus and do the second half or second split of Erotic 90s. Hopefully that's not too long of a break. These have been keeping me busy on my commute. All right, let's go around the horn. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In on Screen 1, oh boy, this is apparently not for the kids this evening. On Screen 1, you have No Hard Feelings, the new Jennifer Lawrence comedy, and Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. So if you bring kids, it should have been the other way around. They should have shown the films the other way around, but I think this is a grown-up evening on Screen 1. Screen 2, Elemental and Little Mermaid. Screen 3, The Flash and Transformers, Rise of the Beast. Screen 4, The Blackening and The Boogeyman over at the Tibbs Drive-In. Over at the Skyline Drive-In this weekend is Transformers, Rise of the Beast, followed by The Flash. And the 29th, yes, they will be showing Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. That's next week. Hopefully you're going to have a review of that on next week's show. Over at IU Cinema, Saturday, 4 o'clock from 1953, the 70th anniversary screening of Tokyo Story. That's can't miss. And then one you can miss, in my opinion. Thursday, June 29th at 7 p.m., Armageddon. Oof, that's a lot of Aerosmith ballads. Over at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Napoleon Dynamite. which I can still quote to this day. Tuesday, June 27th at 10 a.m. is as part of the summer break series, Nancy Drew. June 30th and July 1st, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Jaws. Tuesday, July 11th at 10 a.m., The Road to El Dorado. All of that is happening at the historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. All right, friends, let's grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching this week. Hopefully you've been able to watch some good movies that are new, or at least new to you, as well as all falling back on old favorites. And we start on Twitter with my buddy Missy, who writes, Guardians 3, the new Transformers, or she accidentally wrote the new Traniformers, and the 1974 film Earthquake, which I saw in the theater with my parents. With still trying to figure out how Lauren Green is the father to Ava Gardner in that film. So that's fun. Thank you, Missy. We go to Facebook, and we're going to last week's post of Facebook because the algorithms were weird in the last couple of weeks. I'm sure you knew that. So if I read something twice by a person, sorry, blame Zuckerberg. Apparently he's preparing for his fight with Elon Musk. We start with my buddy Brian Hartz, who I got to get back on the show sometime. At BB's request, we watched both Tron and Tron Legacy. The original is just as bonkers as ever, and I still adore it. Yeah, I was 12 when I saw that in the theater, and it's a lot of fun. The latter was a lot better than both Monica and I remembered. We had been underwhelmed when we saw it in its initial theatrical release, so was I. It's more coherent the second time around, though it still comes unraveled in the third act. Could have used a couple more drafts of the script, but that's a kind of par for the course for 21st century studio franchise tentpole films. BB pronounced it a lot better than the first one because it is, quote, more technological. Oh, BB, wait till you get older. Yeah, I mean, I was excited Jeff Bridges got to have a giant paycheck after winning the Best Actor Oscar for Crazy Heart. So, sure, why not? But I did get to see it on the IMAX screen. So I might have to give it another shot. I don't know. But yeah, Tron at 12, very effective. I also love the video game and Cindy Morgan. Michael writes Pinocchio, Peter Pan and Wendy, The Killers, 1964's version, The Whale, Titanic, 1953, The Mother, Avatar Way of Water, The Young Savages, Renfield, Grand Hotel, and When Trumpets Fade. Thank you, Michael. Okay, back to this week. Nick Rogers writes Transformers, The Flash, 28 Days Later, Master Gardener, The Super Mario Brothers Movie, 1001, Sharky's Machine. Oh, boy, here we go. Sharky's Machine, Tightrope, City Heat. That's Bert and Clint from my youth, man. And this one's for you, Golden Globus. Kinjite, Forbidden Subjects. Nick, I got to get a full report on what you thought of Sharky's Machine and Tightrope. That's an underappreciated film. And City Heat, man, it could have been so much better. Okay, Amanda has gone to the library. She has watched Flipped, which I got to do a red carpet at the Hilbert Circle Theater. And I got to do like a couple minutes of interview time with Anthony Edwards, as well as Penelope Ann Miller. But I remember seeing Rob Reiner there. Amanda also watched Closer to Leslie, which I still need to check out. Living, thank you for watching that. More people need to see Bill Nye in Living because he's great in that. And it would have been my vote for Best Actor. Sorry, Brendan. Amanda also watched Surviving Picasso. David watched Dr. Strangelove. Jamie writes the Lizzie McGuire movie, Tom and Huck, She's All That, Sister Act, Billy Madison, He's All That, Sister Act 2, Bros, the live-action Beauty and the Beast, live-action Lion King, and Brave. Paige writes Tar. Sam Watermeyer writes You Hurt My Feelings, Arbor Demon, End of Days, and Election. Jolene writes, I watched Tar, Women Talking, Living, that's great, and The Quiet Girl. I loved the last three. First one, not so much. And I saw Big Fish at the Living Room. I forgot how great that movie is. Yes, it is. It's probably Tim Burton's most mature film. It's high up there for me. I'm still a Ed Wood guy, but I'm glad you got to see those, Jolene. Lou Harry writes, Living, Little Monsters, no, not the Fred Savage one, the other one, 3,000 Years of Longing, the Shazam sequel, Official Competition, and Snatch. Abdul, got to get him back on, writes The Flash. Jessica writes Megan and Dungeons & Dragons. Zachariah writes La Strada, 8.5, and Elemental. Eric writes his first views, Gable and Stanwyck in the racing film To Please a Lady, partially shot in Indianapolis. And Ray Steele, our Morning Edition voice here at WFYI. I think if you go to his old stomping grounds, RTV6, Ray and I last year did a series of discussions of movies about the Indianapolis 500, and To Please a Lady was one of those. Eric's other first views, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, Avatar, The Way of Water, and Smooth Talk in honor of Treat Williams. Yeah, Sky Point the Treat. I believe that's a Criterion title, so I might need to get on that. The Rewatch for him, The Naked Spur, Strategic Air Command, and Butterflies Are Free for the first time since 1972. And Eric writes, best performance by Goldie Hawn's underwear. Well, you know, Blythe Danner did a pretty good job on Broadway as well. But, yeah, my kid loves Butterflies Are Free. Took my copy to college, so there's that. And there is a poster of Butterflies Are Free in my kid's apartment. Very proud. Daniel writes, Annie, get your gun. The Outfit, As Good as It Gets. The Celluloid Closet, that you should watch that once a year. Humoresque, Rear Window, and Suspicion. JJ writes, Keaton Returns, a.k.a. The Flash, terrible movie, best part was my Batman. The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which he deemed a brutal watch, and Commando, Maximum Fun, and Dumb. I obviously liked Man from U.N.C.L.E. a lot more than you did. I enjoyed it for what it was. And yeah, Commando is fun and dumb. Dustin writes, Do the Right Thing and The Flash. Robert Muggy writes, John Wick Chapter 4, Avatar The Way of Water, Godland, Margot at the Wedding, How to Marry a Millionaire, and a return visit to the Mad Miss Manton. Quick thought, you would think James Cameron would urge his friends in Pandora to rescue the people missing in the submarine. Oh, yeah, you went there. I know. Maybe people will stop messing with nature and water. Just kind of saying there. Whew. Or, as my kid put it, instead of spending money to go to the bottom of the ocean and going to Mars, feeding people. Okay, sorry, back to this. Mike Perry, he writes The Flash. Doug writes a couple noirs, The Big Sleep and Chicago Syndicate, plus Desperately Seeking Susan, Mary Poppins Returns, and binge both seasons of Schmigadoon, a must fan for fans of musicals. Yep. Molly writes Emoji Movie and The Croods, attempting to watch The Great Gatsby today, but it's not looking promising unless the spouse takes a nap. Which version are you watching, Molly? Mike writes Kung Fu the Movie and Batman Forever. Michelle writes, watched a couple of the Transformers with my kids. I can't keep track of which ones. They all look the same to me. That happens, Michelle. It's all right. Taylor writes, Quantumania, Glass Onion, and Shazam Fury of the Gods. Rachel writes, Sherlock Holmes, The Woman in Green, Death on the Nile, the one from the 70s with Peter Ustinov and David Niven. I got to see that on the big screen in Flint, my hometown. Thank you, Rachel. Rachel also watched The Ash Lad, In Search of the Golden Castle, and tonight, Full Metal Alchemist, The Revenge of Scar. Jeff writes, I introduced my youngest, age 18, to Silence of the Lambs over the weekend. Good for you. We showed it to our kid because we got to see the musical version of Silence of the Lambs at the Old Phoenix Theater, so that was a win-win. Terry writes stuff from the last several weeks. The Far Country, Radio On, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, Record Safari, Digging in the Crates of America, The Flash, The City, and Zingerweizen. Thank you, Terry. Pat writes The Flash, Asteroid City, which opens this week, and Stan Lee. Rachel writes The Pitch Perfect Trilogy and The Pirates of Penzance. John Krull writes The Flash, not as bad as I feared, not as good as I hoped. Thank you, John. Krista writes Sanctuary and Spider-Verse, both great in very different ways. Tracy writes Skyfall. Kim posted a title with an IMDb page, and it is not coming up. So, sorry, can't read that. Something wrong with the page. Rebecca writes, I started to watch the HBO version of Angels in America after seeing the Bardfest production, and the live one was so much better. I couldn't get through the HBO version, but I did enjoy watching Meryl Streep as the rabbi in the first part. Just a different meeting, Rebecca. I am going to both parts on Sunday. So, and it's been a while since I've watched the HBO version of Angels. So it'll be a little further because I got things. Kurt writes, for Beltrace, we had Ticket to Paradise, a recent rom-com. On my own, I watched the Macbeth redo Scotland, PA, a quirky film I remember fondly from its release. Yeah, I love Scotland, PA. More people, especially more Shakespeare nuts, need to watch Scotland, PA. Glenn writes, The Shooting. David writes, Nope and Smile. Kevin writes, Harlem Street Singer, Reverend Gary Davis, 2013 documentary. Gary writes, Beyond Atlantis, Putney Swope, The Flash, Pulp Fiction, Transformers Age of Extinction, Drunk, Stoned, Brilliant, Dead, those are all titles, Greta, The Riff Tracks Treatment of Manos, The Hands of Fate, way to go, Gary, Five Nights in Maine, Funeral Home, Jurassic Park Fallen Kingdom, and the Mystery Science Theater Treatment of Overdrawn at the Memory Bank. Thank you, Raul. Mavine writes, The Sorrow and the Pity. That is, for you fans of Annie Hall, you know why. The Pact, Distant, and Brother's Keeper. And thank you, IMCPL. Yes, absolutely. And yeah, I actually got a Blu-ray of The Sorrow and the Pity, so I will have to watch that very soon. And finally, Beverly, my dear sweet wall, writes, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner? And Sullivan's Travels. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. And, yeah, go see a smaller film. Give the big-line blockbusters a break for a little bit. They'll be around. They'll be around a lot longer, sadly. So, anyway, we'll try this again next week. Thank you for listening. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!